بسم الله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله ومن ولا وبعد. Okay, الله مستعان. This is our 19th session, reading from Arabic lessons in Fiqh, level 3 in Mustawa Thalith, Islamic University of Medina, Arabic Language Institute. Okay, today, as I said, this is our 19th session, and we have a couple of matters left over from the last class that we want to just complete before we go on, you know, to a somewhat new topic, the topic of the shurut of sihhatu salat, yani the preconditions for the validity of the salat. Before we go on to that, we have a couple of topics remaining that we want to look at. And then, yeah, and according to the time that we have, we'll try to go on and look at the next major topic. Okay, so we should be on page 30. And the title of the subject on top of the page is Ala man tajibu as-salatu. Ala man tajibu as-salatu. Meaning?
Upon whom prayer is obligatory.
Naam, upon whom prayer is obligatory. Yani, who is the prayer, yani, obligated upon? Who is it obligatory upon? Okay, so we already talked about, in the past session, I'm not going to go back to it now for the sake of time, but we talked about the hukum of salat, and we talked about, yani, the ruling concerning the tariq as-salat, the person who has abandoned salat. And now, yani, if we said that, the person who abandoned salat, what is the ruling concerning the person who abandoned salat? Yani tarik as-salat, we said that there are two cases.
The one who doesn't agree that the salat is...
Okay, the one who outright rejects the yani obligatory nature of salat. The person who rejects that it's obligatory. And the other one, yani, we said that the ruling concerning the person who says, yani, I don't believe that prayer is obligatory, it's not mandatory, we don't have to do this. We said this person, the ruling concerning that person is kufr. Yani, that takes a person out of Islam, to deny, yani, the obligation of salat. The second type is the person who abandons salat
due to laziness or negligence.
And we said that the ruling concerning this person is what? That the ruler or whoever he appoints should advise this person, encourage this person, yani remind them of the obligation of salat. They should repent and then they should return to the performance of salat. If they do not, if they refuse, then their ruling of them is like the other person, yani that they went out of Islam. Okay, so after this, now we want to know, so is the salat obligatory on every human being? That's the topic that we're going to talk about now, and then we're going to also talk about yani children, the prayer of children. Okay, so the first point is ala man tajibu as-salat, upon whom is the salat obligatory? Tajibu ala al-muslimi al-balighi al-aqili. Yani we're talking about the obligation in terms of the implementation, the establishment of Islam on the earth, in the land. Yani who can the Muslim ruler force to pray, yani command and order to pray? Who does he have the right to order to pray? It's obligatory upon you to pray. Can he do that to everybody? Meaning, can he go to a zimmi who's living in the Muslim land and tell him, I order you to pray Dhuhr prayer? No, because it's not obligatory upon the non-Muslim in terms of the implementation of Sharia, of the government having the authority, yani, of implementing the rule of Sharia in the land. But it's obligatory upon the Muslim. Can he go to a child, 3 years old, and order him to pray? No, because it's not obligatory on the children. It's obligatory on the person who reached the age of maturity, al-baligh. And it's also not obligatory on a person who has lost their mind. Person who is what? Insane. Rather, it's obligatory upon the aqil. So the first point here, who is the salat obligatory upon? Tajibu ala al-muslimi, al-balighi al-aqili. Yani the Muslim who has reached the age of responsibility, maturity, and who is sane, who has control over their senses. أَمَّا كَوْنُهَا لَا تَجِبُ عَلَى الصَّبِيِّ وَالْمَجْنُونِ فَلِي حَدِيثِ عَائِشَةَ رضي الله عنها عن النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم قال رفع القلم عن ثلاثة عن النائم حتى يستيقظ وعن الصبي حتى يحتلم وعن المجنون حتى يعقل رواه أحمد وأصحاب السنن والحاكم وقال يعني حاكم قال صحيح على شرط الشيخين وحسنه الترمذي. Okay, so as far as أما قولها لا تجب على الصبي والمجنون. As what does this mean?
For the case.
يعني As far as the case or the يعني the fact that it is not obligatory upon the child and the insane person. فلي حديث عائشة. This is يعني this conclusion is based upon the hadith of Aisha رضي الله عنها, may Allah be pleased with her, from the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم, who said رفع القلم عن ثلاثة. يرحمك الله. رفع القلم عن ثلاثة يعني the pen has been lifted, has been raised up from three. Which pen is this that has been lifted? The writing, recording of the deeds. يعني the angels who record the deeds. This writing of the deeds of the people for which they will be responsible and called to account on Yawm al-Qiyamah is lifted. The pen is lifted. There's no writing taking place for three people. رُفِيَ الْقَلَمُ عَنْ ثَلَاثَةٍ. And this is a reminder that other than these three, the pen is writing. So if you're not in any of these three categories, know that the pen is writing. Our deeds are being recorded. Our speech is being recorded. Whatever we are doing is being recorded. And we will be called to account for it. May Allah save us from the evil of our own deeds. Wallahi, it is severe. As far as the fact that it is not obligatory upon the child and the insane person, is because of the hadith of Aisha radiallahu anha from the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. He said, the pen has been lifted from three. The meaning of this is that those three people, their deeds are not being recorded against them. Their deeds are not being recorded against them. The first of them is an-na'im. The na'im, the sleeping person, hatta yastayqidha, until they wake up. And while they're sleeping, free of blame. The person does something in their sleep, we don't blame them for that. We don't say, you know, he or she did this or that or the other when they were asleep, and that means it shows that this, yani these people are corrupt. No, a person asleep might do something, they're free of blame until they wake up. When they wake up, then they become responsible for what they do. وَعَنَ السَّبِيِّ حَتَّى يَحْتَلَمْ يعني the child is free, the pen is lifted from the child until it reached the age of puberty. Until it reached the age of puberty, maturity, yani discernment, where they actually became responsible for their actions. وَعَنَ الْمَجْنُونَ حَتَّى يَعْقِلَ and the insane person until they regain their sanity, until they regain control over their mind so that they know what they are doing, they distinguish between right and wrong, and therefore the pen records again. Now,
At what age a person can be considered at the age of being able to get
along with one? The girl, when she begins to have menses, and the boy, yani when they begin to have pubic hairs around the private area under the arms like this, then they became yani responsible. Or they have yani nocturnal yani emission in their sleep, yani semen emission from their sleep, now wet dream or something like this, now. If they haven't reached the age of puberty, they are not responsible. But it doesn't mean that, and we're going to see in the next, after this, doesn't mean that they shouldn't be taught to be responsible. Yani as soon as the child is able to understand right and wrong, they should be made responsible. Yani if you say to a child, sit, stop, and they understand and they stop, you know that they comprehend. That child has to be held responsible now. Not by the angels recording, But now you have to begin to treat that child like they know what they're doing. So be serious with them. Don't just let them do everything and say, oh, he's just a child, breaking things, saying bad things. It's just a child. No, if they understand, you have to make them know that this is not the behavior that is becoming of you. Okay, so children, even though they didn't reach the age of puberty where it's being recorded against them, the parents still have to, the companions of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, is authentically reported that in Ramadan they used to make their children fast. And they used to give them something to play with to occupy their mind so they won't think about eating. Even though it's not mandatory for them to fast, but the encouragement for them to fast. So they used to encourage them to fast, even if they fast for half of a day or part of a day, so that they begin to train them even before they became responsible. Okay, so and the Prophet ﷺ also told us, and in which we will read inshallah as we go along, about the children. But the point is, their behavior, their deeds, is not going to be held against them until they reach the age of puberty.
For people who are like special cases, like sometimes they go through late puberty,
yeah.
Was there an age that they
set? Yeah, there are some ages also, according to the scholars of fiqh, but it's not like set by the textual evidence from Sharia, but some of the scholars give some age limit, like 15, and it's like, but I mean, anyway, that is flexible, perhaps, probably, you know, because there's no doubt that the maturity or the puberty of the boy or the girl is going to differ between boy and girl, and also differ in different climates. Different climates. Naam. Yes, sure. The girls are going to reach puberty much earlier in certain climates. That's why you find in certain countries, like in Africa and Asia, the girls are reaching maturity earlier. And then there are other effects also, but we're not going to talk about that now, okay? Because even now we found that even in this climate, the children are maturing very early, physically, very early, because of other stuff. And that's related to things like the food, the type, the food that we're eating, that the unnatural food that we're being fed, and all of that kind of stuff. But anyway, I don't want to get sidetracked, really, because this lesson is very important. We don't have a lot of time.
Do you have any more other phases after phase 30?
No.
I got 30.
You have to remind me, inshallah.
Send
me an email.
Inshallah.
Taib, if anybody doesn't have the book, send me an email. I'll send you the PDF file. But you have to remind me, please. Okay, so what we're saying here, okay. The pen is lifted from three, from the sleeping person until they wake, from the child until they reach the age of puberty, and from the insane person until they regain their sanity. This narration of Aisha radiallahu anha is reported by Ahmed in his Musnad, Ashab al-Sunan. Ashab al-Sunan meaning?
The four Sunan.
Yani Abu Dawud, Al-Tirmidhi, Ibn Majah, and Nasa'i. Wal-Hakim, and his book is? Al-Mustadrak. And the Mustadrak, yani is Mustadrak ala Sahihain. The meaning of it is that Al-Hakim, Al-Imam Al-Hakim, what he intended to do was to catch the hadith that Al-Bukhari and Muslim missed. According to his claim, that meet the level of authenticity that they should have collected, but they didn't collect them in the book, so he collected them in his book called Al-Mustadrak. He didn't always hit the mark, but in any case, that's the point. We don't understand what kind of book is this. A very important book, which he collected hadith, which he considered to be sahih, that Bukhari and Muslim missed. Al-Hakim says, and he says here, وَقَالَ قَالَ is in reference to Al-Hakim. Al-Hakim said, صَحِيحٌ عَلَى شَرْطَ الشَّيْخَيْنِ meaning he said, this hadith is sahih according to the condition of authenticity of the two sheikhs. The two sheikhs. Who are they? Al-Bukhari and Muslim. They're not the two sheikhs, and the sheikhs of our masajid in Brooklyn and the Bronx. No. Al-Bukhari and Muslim. Sahih ala sharat al-shaykhain. Wahassanahu al-Tirmidhi. And al-Imam al-Tirmidhi, rahimahullah, he declared this hadith to be hasan. Shaykh al-Albani, rahimahullah, said in Sahih al-Jami'ah, this hadith is sahih. In hadith number 3513. Okay, so who is it obligatory upon? Yani the Muslim, wa alaykum salam, who has reached puberty and who is sane. It's obligatory. Salat is obligatory. That means a Muslim who reached puberty and they're sane, it became serious. It became serious that they have to pray. It's obligatory. Especially for our children. If we have children, we have to attend to this matter. Don't take the matter lightly. Next point. Salatu as-sabi. The prayer of the child. The prayer of the child. As-sabiyu wa in kanat as-salatu ghayra wajibatin alayhi. the child, even though the prayer is not obligatory upon them until they reach the age of puberty. Even though it's not obligatory upon them. إِلَّا أَنَّهُ يَنْبَغِي لِوَلِيِّهِ أَنْ يَأْمُرَهُ بِهَا إِذَا بَلَغَ سَبْعَ سِنِينَ. Even though it's not obligatory upon the child. Except, yeah, that's so, but guess what? It's يَنْبَغِي. يعني it's incumbent upon the wali of the child. لِوَلِيِّهِ. The one who's responsible for that child. Whether their father, their mother, their uncle, grandfather, whoever's responsible for a child. Whoever's taking care of that child. It's yambaghi, incumbent upon them, upon the wali, to command the child, biha, yani biha, bis-salat, to command the child to perform the salat, idha balagha sab'a sanin. Once that child has reached seven. So here's the child, 7 years old, they didn't reach the age of puberty, but guess what? It's incumbent upon the parent to begin to train that child. So that when they reach the age of puberty, it won't be like hardship. I've been 10 years, 12 years, 13 years, I never had to pray. Now all of a sudden I got to do all this prayer? No, you have to learn now. When they're 7 years old, you have to start to command them to pray. So that gradually, little by little, they get used to praying, they learn how to pray, they start praying more consistently, they start praying regularly. By the time they reach puberty, it's normal for them. They're used to doing this. They've been doing it for years by now. Okay? And the same thing with fasting. Even a child 3, 4, 5 years old, they can fast. I know that for a fact. Because all of my children fasted, yani when they were 5 and 6 years old. Sometimes 1, 2, 3 days, sometimes half of the month, sometimes the whole month. Naam. And that wasn't in this nice weather in New York, that was in Sudan. And in the Arab countries where it was hot. It was hot. So even the children, if you begin to train them when they're young, it becomes easy. By the time they reach puberty, it's natural. It's nothing to it. The girls clothe them. When they're children. So when they grow up, it's not strange that now suddenly they got to wear long dresses. They've been wearing long dresses since they were children. It's normal for them. If we don't train our children when they're young, when they get older, we're going to have a problem. I'm telling you, you're going to have a problem. If you don't believe it, just look around at a lot of the Muslim girls now. They don't wear any clothing, almost. I mean, they're dressed like kafirs. Allahu musta'an. And then, to be fair, and the Muslim men are also negligent, defective. Allahu musta'an.
You got jam?
Huh?
You got jam?
Yeah, sorry. Okay, as-sabi, even though the salat is not obligatory upon him, it is incumbent upon the guardian to command that child to pray when they reach 7 years old. وَذَلِكَ لِحَدِيثِ عَمْرٍ إِبْنِ شُعَيْبٍ عَنْ أَبِيهِ عَنْ جَدِّهِ رضي الله عنهما. You with me? رضي الله عنهما. Huh? هما is two. It's dual. يعني عبد الله and his father عمر. عبد الله بن عمرو بن العاص. يعني this hadith is the hadith of عمر ابن شعيب from his father, from his grandfather. شعيب, yani, the father of Amr, the one who's narrating this hadith, Shu'aib, his name is Shu'aib, this is a note, his name is Shu'aib ibn Muhammad, ibn Abdullah ibn Amr ibn al-As. Abdullah ibn Amr ibn al-As is his grandfather, great-grandfather actually. But in any case, in this narration, the meaning of it, as Al-Dhahabi said, that what is intended by Amr ibn Shu'aib an Abihi an Jaddihi, it means Amr and Shu'aib, the son of Muhammad, the son of Abdullah ibn Amr ibn al-As. Abdullah ibn Amr al-As, radiallahu anhuma, him and his father were companions. Him and his father were companions. Okay, in this hadith, he said, قَالَ رَسُولُ اللَّهِ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمَ. يعني الذهبي said, الجد المذكور في السند هو الصحابي الجليل Abdullah ibn Amr ibn al-As. That's why I'm saying رضي الله عنهما. Because the Dhahabi said that al-jad al-madhkur fi al-sanad, yani in this narration it says an abihan jaddihi, al-Dhahabi said who is intended here is al-sahabi al-jaleel Abdullah ibn Amr ibn al-As. That's who is intended in this isnad when he said an jaddihi. He's intending to mean Abdullah ibn Amr ibn al-As رضي الله عنهما. I don't want to go into the details of it for the sake of time. But in any case, and you try to take that as a fa'idah. Because this isnad is a little bit tricky, and some other scholars had a different opinion about it. This is the correct opinion. What Imam al-Zahabi said, rahimahullah, is that al-jad here, is what is intended by it, is the noble companion, Abdullah ibn Amr ibn al-As, radiallahu anhumah. He said, the Messenger of Allah, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, said, مُرُوا أَوْلَادَكُمْ بِالصَّلَاةِ وَهُمْ أَبْنَاءُ سَبَعِ سِنِينَ وَاضْرِبُوهُمْ عَلَيْهَا وَهُمْ أَبْنَاءُ عَشْرٍ وَفَرِّقُوا بَيْنَهُمْ فِي الْمَضَاجِعِ رَهُ أَحْمَدُ وَأَبُو دَاوُدَ وَالْحَاكِمُ وَقَالَ صَحِيحٌ عَلَى شَرْطِ مُسْلِمٍ. The Prophet ﷺ said in this hadith of Amr ibn Shu'ayb, يعني عن أبيه عن جده رضي الله عنهما, he said, مُرُوا أَوْلَادَكُمْ بِالصَّلَاةِ وَهُمْ أَبْنَاءُ سَبَعِ سِنِينَ. What is the meaning?
Command
your children to pray, to perform the salat while they are 7 years old. يعني وَهُمْ, this while الحال, while their condition is that they reached 7 years. وَهُمْ أَبَنَاءُ سَبْعِ سِنِينَ وَضْرِبُوهُمْ عَلَيْهَا and beat them عَلَيْهَا يعني على الصلاة upon يعني your command to them to make salat, beat them if they don't pray. When? وَهُمْ أَبَنَاءُ عَشْرِ سِنِينَ, when they are 10 years. Okay, notice, command them when they are 7, beat them when they are 10. Look at the wisdom of the Prophet ﷺ. He gave 3 whole years for them to get used to praying, not 3 weeks. And if you don't pray, I'm going to beat you. 3 years. Yani, the child at 7 years old, believe me, they comprehend. He has little children. They comprehend. I have a little grandson that was with us last night, spent the night with us, and he came to me, he wanted some juice, and my wife couldn't open the new container, and he came to me and said, open, open. I'm saying, open what? Then the juice comes, right? And he knows, like, open, I want some juice, and she can't open it, he came to me. And he knows that I don't play, right? So normally he's not going to come to me. But that time he wanted something, he came, and he knew what to say. He knew how to say, open, open. I don't know what to open. But he knows the juice bottle is coming, and I want you to open it. He's not 1 year and some months. Not 2 years, year and a half, like this. I don't know how old he is, but he's not 2 years. 1 year, maybe 1 year and a few months, like that. But the point is, he comprehends. When he wants to run wild, he runs wild. But if I came in the room, watch. Straighten up. They understand. Believe me, brother. They understand. You can tell him, sit, stop, stop. He doesn't pay you any mind. But if I came and said, stop, he will run to his mother, or run to his grandmother, or run and hide someplace, because he knows what stop means. But he obeys it when he wants to. When he wants to. Okay, so these children, at 7 years old, wallahi, they understand. 3 years is more than enough time to learn how to pray and get used to praying. Even at 10, they didn't reach puberty. But the Prophet ﷺ said, by then, if they didn't pray, you're going to the dangerous area. You have to discipline them now. Because if you don't, they're going to reach 15 and 16, and guess what? They're out of control. You can't do nothing with them then. It's too late then. These kids now, 15, 16 years old, it's too late. You can't do nothing with them. They're not trying to hear it. Especially if they know that if you do anything, all they have to do is go to school. Yo, teacher, my dad hit me. Call the police on them. Huh? You have to take control before it's too late. Otherwise, we're losing our children. Wallahu musta'an. The Prophet ﷺ said here, Yani, command your children with the salat when they are 7 years old. Beat them, Yani, for this reason. For them not making the salat when they are 10 years old, if they refuse to pray. وَفَرِّقُوا بَيْنَهُمْ فِي الْمَضَاجِعِ, and separate the children. Yani, when they're 10 years old, don't allow boys and girls to sleep together. That's too old for them to be sleeping together. That's too old for the boys to be going into the ladies' area to get something from their mother. It's too old. There's none of that. Okay? So let's pay attention to this. This hadith is narrated by Ahmed, Abu Dawud, Al-Hakim. And Hakim said the hadith is Sahih ala sharti Muslim. In the previous hadith he said Sahih ala sharti Shaykhain. Here he said Sahih ala sharti Muslim. And this is because yani Al-Imam Al-Bukhari and Al-Imam Muslim had different shurut that they placed for themselves, that I will not accept the hadith as being Sahih unless it met certain conditions. But their conditions were not the same. Their conditions were not the same. And due to this, the meticulous study of what were the conditions of Bukhari, rahimahullah, what were the conditions of Muslims, due to this, the majority of the ulama, of the people of Sunnah, agree that the book of Sahih al-Bukhari is more important, is greater, is more authentic than Sahih Muslim. Both of them are Sahih. Both of them, yani we accept completely. But which one is stronger? Actually, al-Bukhari is stronger, except the people in al-Maghrib, yani in the western part of the African continent, who give preference to Muslim over Bukhari. In any case, yani, he said, this one is according to the conditions of Muslim. Did not meet the conditions of Al-Imam Al-Bukhari. Okay, this is the end of this topic. And the important thing here is that the Salat is obligatory upon the person when they reach the age of puberty. But even the child who didn't reach puberty, they should be ordered to pray. They should be beat for not praying. And beat doesn't mean brutalize them. Child abuse. It doesn't mean leave marks on their back, bruises on their face, knocking their teeth out, breaking their bones. That's not a part of Islam. That has nothing to do with Islam. But it means they have to be disciplined. That's a fact. They have to be disciplined. Okay, I just want to add one point here. Now, yeah, the standard of Bukhari is stronger. Wallahu a'lam. Oh, that's very technical. In any case, the point I want to mention here right now, just quickly, I want to mention, did anybody receive an email from me for this class last night or this morning? Now, so there's a PDF file that I sent to the class. The book is called Al-Wajiz fi Fiqh Al-Sunnah wal-Kitab Al-Aziz by Sheikh Abdul Azim Al-Badawi. It's a very important summary of fiqh. Okay, it's another book that we can use as a secondary reference in our studies of fiqh. It's a very important book of fiqh in which the issues of fiqh are outlined like in the books of fiqh, Tahara and Salat and Zakat and Siyam and marriage and divorce and so on, except that every issue is brought with the evidence in summary. An ayat or a hadith or a couple of ayats and a couple of hadith, very, very brief. And all of the hadith in this book are checked according to for authenticity. Yani there's no hadith mentioned except that its grade is also mentioned. Is it sahih, hasan, or whatever? Okay, and references are given back to the books, especially the books of Sheikh Al-Albani, because the Sheikh, he was a student of Sheikh Al-Albani. And it's a good book. If you want to study fiqh, not according to the madhab, but according to the sunnah, then it's a good book. Yani it's called what? Al-Wajiz fi fiqh al-sunnah wal-kitab al-aziz. Yani Al-Wajiz means summary of the fiqh according to the sunnah, not according to the madhab, and according to Al-Kitab Al-Aziz, which is Al-Quran, according to the Quran and sunnah. So anyway, he says here, in this in the chapter of Salat, near the beginning of the chapter, or not necessarily in the beginning, but it says, Imamat al-Sabi. And we just talked about the prayer of the Sabi, the child, that they should be ordered to pray. He mentions a hadith here. I just want to mention this hadith to you in brief. Under the Imama of the Sabi. And is a child allowed to lead the prayer?
No.
When they reach 7 or 10?
Yes.
Or maturity? The hadith of Amr ibn Salama radiallahu anhu, he said, radiallahu anhuma, he said when the Fath of Mecca took place, the people hastened to enter into Islam, and my father, who was the leader of the tribe, he also hastened to bring our people to Islam, our tribe. So when he came back from meeting with the Prophet ﷺ, he said, جئتكم والله من عند النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم حقا. He said, I came to you, I swear by Allah, from the Prophet in truth, the real Prophet. فقال, and he said to me, or he said to us, the Prophet, صلوا صلاتا كذا في حين كذا وصلوا صلاتا كذا في حين كذا فإذا حضرت الصلاة فليؤذن أحدكم وليؤمكم أكثركم قرآنا. He said that he told us to pray such and such prayer at such and such time, and such prayer at such and such time. Meaning, yani, though at this time, asr prayer at this time, and so on. And he said, when the time for the prayer came, فَلْيُؤَذِّنْ أَحَدُكُمْ, then one of you should call, make the announcement for the prayer, وَلْيَأُمُّكُمْ أَكْثَرُكُمْ قُرْآنًا, and the one who knows the most Qur'an should lead you in prayer. فَنَظَرُوا, so they looked, who knows the most Qur'an in these people? فَلَمْ يَكُنْ أَحَدٌ أَكْثَرُ قُرْآنًا مِنِّي, and there was nobody who knew more Qur'an than me. لِمَا كُنْتُ أَتَلَقِّي مِنَ الرُّكْبَانِ, due to what I used to receive from the riders, the people traveling by, when they would pass by us, they would pray and they would recite Qur'an, I would pick it up and learn it. فَقَدَّمُونِي بَيْنَ أَيْدِيهِمْ, so the people, when they looked and they saw I knew the Qur'an, they put me in front of them. وَأَنَا إِبْنُ سِتِّي أَوْ سَبْعِي سِنِينَ, and I was only 6 or 7 years old. That hadith, this took place in the time of the Prophet ﷺ, while he was living. And the Prophet knew it, and he was their imam. And in some of the narrations of the hadith, he said, I didn't have good clothing, so sometimes when I would bow, and he could see my body, so they bought me some new clothing. He said there was nothing that made me more happy than a new suit of clothing. He was just a baby. He was just a child. Yani, subhanallah. This is Islam. This is Islam. And look at how the people, they looked around, they followed the instruction of the Prophet. Who knows the most Quran? Khalas, no arguing, disputing. Yani, put him in front. He's the one who knows Quran. That's how it's supposed to be. Yani, the Prophet ﷺ gave us instruction, we just hear and obey. No arguing, disputing, I think, I feel, you know, little boy gonna lead me in prayer. Ain't got nothing to do with that. It's hear and obey. Sami'na wa ta'ana. This is Islam. Sometimes we're too rational, too intellectual. I think, I feel. We're not interested in what you think and what you feel. Wallahi, we're not interested in that. We're interested in what Allah has commanded us with. So His Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. If we obey Allah and His Messenger, we'll be successful. And if we don't, we will not be successful.
That was encouragement too,
Sheikh,
to the young boy too.
It was encouragement.
Yeah.
You know, after that, I mean, wasn't nobody going to catch up with him, right? He going to be the imam, because he's going on now. He might get a new suit of clothing too, man. Another one. Now, Waleed.
I don't want to get sidetracked, but is there a difference of opinion about who leads the prayer? Like, somebody might know more Islam. I've heard that there's a difference of opinion about who knows the Sunnah more, maybe.
Nah. That's true. Now, there are hadith which deal with yani the details of this matter. We're just dealing with the child right now. But the Prophet ﷺ told other people yani that the one who knows the most Quran should lead the salat. But if they're equal in Quran, then the one who knows the sunnah best. If they're equal in that, then the one who made hijra, who migrated, who left the land of the kuffar to go to the land of the Muslims. And if they're equal in that, then the one who came to Islam first. So there's details for sure. There's other considerations that came in the hadith. That the one who, yani, knows the sunnah, the one who made hijrah, this tells you the importance of hijrah. The Prophet ﷺ took that into consideration. Two people that know Quran and sunnah equal, guess what? Which one actually made hijrah first? Who entered Islam first? All of this has some bearing. Okay, quickly, yani, I don't know what time we have to stop. Let me see, how long have we been going? Okay, we got time. We've only been going 34 minutes. Okay, so the next chapter that we want to look at is Shurut Sihhat al-Salat. This is a new chapter from the Book of Salat. Very important topic, Shurut Sihhat al-Salati. Shurut Sihhat al-Salati. Yani, the conditions for the validity of the prayer. The Shurut here, it means the preconditions. Yani, the things that have to be done before you pray, these things have to be in order. Okay? So what are the things that have to be in order before we can pray? If we want our prayer to be valid. Okay? So we're going to look through them quickly and then we're going to come back and look at the details. Number one, it says, At-taharatu min al-hadathi. At-taharatu min al-hadathi. Meaning, being pure, purified, being purified from the hadath, yani the thing that, the state of impurity, the state of impurity. And we might add here, we'll look at it when we come back to it, yani at-tahara min al-hadathain, yani from the major purity and minor purity. Yani a person has to be free from yani al-hadath al-asgar as well as al-hadath al-akbar. Okay, second point, I mean the second condition, dukhul al-waqti. Dukhul al-waqti. Yani, meaning?
The entering of the time.
The entering of the time. Yani, meaning the time for the prayer has to have come. And you can't pray dhuhr before the time for dhuhr. The sun didn't reach the zenith yet. It didn't begin to decline yet. Maybe it just reached the zenith. You can't pray at that time. You have to wait until the time for the prayer begins. Okay, we can't pray Maghrib before the sun set completely. The upper rim of the sun has to be completely below the horizon. You can't pray before that. Okay? Dukhul al-waqt. That's a precondition. Prayer is not valid if the time for the prayer didn't enter yet. Dukhul al-waqt. The third thing. Satru al-awra or satru al-awra. Meaning the covering of the private area. The awra. What is the awra? Yani we'll talk about it yani in this topic. What is the awra of the man? What is the awra of the woman? The awra has to be covered. And here we should note that sometimes the covering of the awra doesn't just mean that there's something covering it, but it has to be covered in such a way that it's not visible, that it's not see-through, that it's not so tight, and so on. Yani covering the awra doesn't just mean you have clothing on, but it can't be clothing that you can see through, or clothing that's so tight that it's like having no clothing. Okay? Covering of the awra. That's a condition for the validity of prayer. Some people are praying and guess what? Their prayer is not valid because they didn't fulfill the shurut for sihat al-salat. Number four. Number four. يعني taharatu al-thawbi wal-badani wal-makani alladhi yusalli fihi. يعني taharatu al-thawb means that the purification of the garment, the clothing that you're wearing, have to be free from any najasa, anything that's impure. It doesn't have to be free from some soil. You got some dirt on it, you spilled some milk on it, or yani you, somebody rubbed your clothing with a date and you left some after effect. That's not najas. But it has to be free from impurities, from najas. The clothing, well, badan, and also your body has to be free from najas. Yani meaning that if something impure got on your arm or your hand or your leg, even though you're in a state of purification, yani you just made wudu, but somebody got some impurity on your body, you have to remove that impurity. You don't have to make wudu again, but you have to remove the impurity. That's one thing. The state of purification from wudu and the impurity being on your body is two different things. Okay? So that means, like we already talked about the state of purity, tahara. Now we're talking about the body being free from any impurity. Well, makan alladhi yusalli fi, and likewise the place in which you are praying has to be free from impurities. So your clothing has to be clean, free from impurities, your body has to be free of impurities, and the place where you're praying has to be free of impurities. Number five. Istiqbal al-qiblati, yani al-ka'ba. Istiqbal al-qibla. The meaning?
Facing the qibla.
What do we mean by qibla? The qibla means the direction. The direction of prayer. Specifically, what is intended by that, the direction of prayer means the Ka'ba. The Ka'ba. And we're going to talk about the details of that. If you are actually in the Masjid al-Haram, or you are in the city of Mecca, or you're in another country. Yani, what does it mean? Yani, the Qibla, facing the Kaaba. What does it mean? Okay, because it's different if you're in another country, if you're in the city of Mecca, if you're inside the masjid, it's different. Okay? That's number five. And number six is An-Niyyah. An-Niyyah too. Number six is An-Niyyah too. And of course, the Niyyah is from amongst the most important things. And before a person prays, and they have to make sure that they have intention, pure intention to perform the prayer for Allah alone. And then there's some discussion about this also that we'll come back to, each point by point by point. Okay, who can tell me these six preconditions without looking at the book? It doesn't have to be in order. Ala ayy tartib? Okay, here's a question before that. So that gives you a chance not to look at the book, but to think. Not to look at the book, but to think. Naam. Okay, sometimes some scholars mention other conditions that are not specific to Salat, but that are conditions for the validity of any act of worship. Okay, so we'll look at that also. Yani, the validity of Salat also requires what? Some things that we mentioned before. Yani, that the person has to be a Muslim, person has to be sane, person has to be any whatever. Like, so there are other conditions, but those conditions are not specifically related to Salat. That's in general. So we're talking here about the conditions that are specific to Salat. Specific to Salat. Okay, so we'll come to that inshallah. Okay, now who knows all six of them that we mentioned without looking at the book? Al-Waleed. Al-Waleed. Notice he said Bismillah. That means that when you want to do something, always ask Allah's help, right?
No.
Okay.
MashaAllah.
I want to say in order, but I'm just going to say it.
No, don't worry.
Intention.
Facing
the Qibla. One must be pure, as in wudu or ghusl, depending
state
on...
state of purification, like wudu.
And then one, if whether they have wudu or not, like getting off the clothes, the place of prayer.
Okay.
Or one's own body.
The clothes, the place of prayer in the body.
They must be covered, cover the aura.
Covering the aura.
And... The time of prayer
has to be the time of prayer. It has to be time for the prayer is entered. Ahsant, mashallah. Ahsant. Somebody else, give us.
In Arabic.
No, in Arabic. There you go.
Taharatu
min al-hadath.
طهارة
الثوب والبدن والمكان الذي يصلي فيه.
نعم.
النية.
استقبال القبلة.
دخول الوقت. Somebody may help him if he doesn't get it. Wait a minute! Don't scream it out. Let him try first. سترة العورة. طيب. نعم يا أبو بكر أبا بكر
أبا بكر
طهارة
من الحدث
cleaning the place of المكان
cleaning the place of prayer البدن body والثوب النية دخول الوقت سترة الأورة استقبال القبلة. Okay. طيب على كل حال, what's important, brothers and sisters, what's important really here is that we actually know these things and that we are conscious of them, that we make sure that the prayer is not valid without them. Because sometimes an issue came up and somebody want to know, can you pray like this, that and the other, and they didn't even consider that there are preconditions for the salah. That if those are not fulfilled, no matter whatever you do after that, it doesn't really matter. So we have to know these things, and also, as we look at them in a little bit of detail, we should know what the evidence is. If somebody said, well, why you got to have this and why you got to have that, well, we need to have some evidence. Let's look at the evidence a little bit. How much time do we have?
30 minutes.
We have... Okay, let's try to look at it a little bit, and some of these points, whatever we can cover right now. Okay, go back to page 31. شروط صحة الصلاة الأول الطهارة من الحدث. يعني being purified from the state of impurity. And I said that يعني we could say الطهارة من الحدثين from يعني الحدث الأكبر والحدث الأصغر. يعني person has to be free from major impurity as well as minor impurity. And it says here, يعني the basis for this is حديث أبي هريرة رضي الله عنه لا تقبل صلاة أحدكم إذا أحدث حتى يتوضع. Meaning
not accepted with any of anyone of you answering with the purified
conversation. The prayer of one of you is accepted if he has invalidated his state of purification until he performs wudu, until he performs ablution. Naam. This hadith is muttafaqun alayh, meaning that it's agreed upon as being sahih by al-Bukhari and Muslim. I want to add another hadith, the hadith of Abdul ibn Umar radiyallahu anhuma, reported by Al-Imam Muslim, in which he said, لَا تُقْبَلُ صَلَاتٌ بِغَيْرِ تُهُورٍ لَا تُقْبَلُ صَلَاتٌ بِغَيْرِ تُهُورٍ, reported by Imam Muslim. And the reason why I want to mention this hadith is because the hadith that we have in our book, لَا تُقْبَلُ صَلَاتُ أَحَدِكُمْ إِذَا أَحْتَفَى حَتَّى يَتَوَضَّى. What is the difference between these two hadith, if anybody can? Ya Abdul Haq.
First here they mention only wudu.
Naam. In our hadith, in our book, the prayer of one of you is accepted, إِذَا أَحْتَفَى حَتَّى يَتَوَضَّى. That means that this hadith is specifically talking about minor impurity. Because he's saying until you make wudu. What if a person has major impurity? Wudu is not going to suffice that, right? So this hadith is a little bit more general. لَا تُقْبَلُ صَلَاتٌ بِغَيْرِ تُهُورٍ. Prayer is not accepted without purification. That means that includes the major and minor state and major and minor purification. Yani includes بِغَيْرِ تُهُورٍ, includes wudu and ghusl. Also, I want to mention from the book that I sent you as a reference, they also mentioned another proof for this particular point, at-tahara min al-hadathain, from both states of purity, the ayat of the Quran, the saying of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in Surah Ma'idah. Which ayat in Surah Ma'idah?
Ya ayyuhallatheena amanu idha qumtum ila salati fa'tazilu wujuhakum wa aydiyakum ila al-marafiq wamsahu bi rusikum wa arjulakum ila al-ka'bayn.
Up to there. Okay, this ayat in Surah Ma'idah, 5th surah, 6th ayat, the saying of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. By the way, this ayat is a proof in this context in reference to what? It's a proof of what?
Wudu.
It's a proof that of wudu. When a person needs to purify themselves.
And how to make wudu.
And
also,
and importantly, and it's also a proof for ghusl. It's also a proof for ghusl. And the end of what he just read, وَإِن كُنْتُمْ جُنُوبًا, major state of impurity, فَالطَّحَرُ. فَالطَّحَرُ means ghusl, to perform the ghusl. So in this ayat, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا إِذَا كُمْتُمْ إِلَى الصَّلَاةِ فَاغْسِلُوا وُجُوهَكُمْ وَأَيْدِيَكُمْ إِلَى الْمَرَافِقِ وَامْسَحُوا بِرُؤُوسِكُمْ وَأَرْجُلَكُمْ إِلَى الْكَعْبَيْنِ. This is wudu. And if you intend to make salat, then wash your faces and your hands up to your elbows, and wipe your heads and wash your feet to your ankles, up to and including your ankles. This is the command to make wudu from minor impurity. When kuntum junuban, this part of the ayah talks about major impurity. If you're in a state of major impurity from having marital relations, or that which is the same as it, fattaharu, then you must purify yourself, meaning take a ghusl. So this ayah is very important evidence in this issue, because it's also including both types of yani purification, al-wudu and al-ghusl. Second condition, dukhul al-waqti, yani the entry of the time for the prayer, the beginning of his time must have entered. وَذَلِكَ فِي الصَّلَاةِ الْمَفْرُوضَةِ الْمُؤَقَّطَةِ لِقَوْلِ اللَّهِ تَعَالَى إِنَّ الصَّلَاةَ كَانَتْ عَلَى الْمُؤْمِنِينَ كِتَابًا مَوْقُوتًا. Surah An-Nisa, 4th Surah, 103rd Ayat. Yani a precondition is that the time for the prayer must have entered, and that is in reference to ذَلِكَ فِي الصَّلَاةِ الْمَفْرُودَةِ. This is in reference to the obligatory prayers, المؤكتة, yani which it have fixed times, based on the saying of Allah the Most High, in the salata, كانت على المؤمنين كتابا موقوتا. كتابا موقوتا means that is something whose time has been fixed. Yani it has been made obligatory to make it at a fixed time. Indeed, the salat has been yani made obligatory upon the believers at fixed times. Kitaban mawqutan. Obligatory at fixed times. And for this reason, we say that it is not valid that a person performs the salat before the entry of his time, nor after the ending of his time. Illa li'udhur. Unless they have a udhur shara'i. Yani the prayer cannot be performed before its time, nor after its time. Illa li'udhur shara'i. Except with a legal excuse. Like the person is traveling, they can make the prayer earlier, before its time, or later, after its time. And you can perform dhuhr after the time for dhuhr is finished, in the time of asr, if you're traveling combining the prayers, right? Or you can make asr early, before its time. If you combine the prayers as a traveler in the earlier time of dhuhr, you can make asr before its time comes in. And by the way, if the prayers are combined for whatever reason, whether it's due to traveling or inclement weather or otherwise, you can pray the sunnah prayers after you prayed asr. You can pray the sunnah prayers after you prayed asr. Rather, I will go further than that to say, even if you're not combining the prayers, if you're praying asr in its time, you can pray after asr. The Prophet ﷺ did it. Ali ibn Abi Talib did it. Anas ibn Malik, Bilal ibn Rabah, radiallahu anhuma, they all confirmed it in their authentic hadith, proving the permissibility of praying after asr. What is prohibited is to pray when the time for Maghrib is almost coming in. Anyway, this is a long discussion. Now is not the time for it. But there are a lot of hadith. Not one or two or three. There are a lot of sahaba. The Prophet ﷺ is narrated from Aisha and others, radiallahu anha, in Al-Bukhari, that he used to pray after asr, two rak'ah, and he never abandoned it until he died. She said he never came to my house after the asr prayer, except that he prayed two rak'ah, and he never abandoned it until he died. Now,
specific question, but quick, inshallah. So if it's like, for example, there's going to be you're traveling at, let's say, 10 a.m. Far before lift, and you won't reach your destination till nighttime. Without an ability to pray, like if you're on an airplane and it's not possible for you to go to pray at all. Or whatever the circumstances may be. Can you combine the prayer before even lift? Like if you're going to combine lift and asr?
No, you can't combine the prayer before lift. Cannot combine the prayer before dhuhr. But you can combine those prayers later. Yani at any time during that journey, once dhuhr comes in, you can pray at any time up until the end of asr. If a person is unable to pray even at that time, in that situation or circumstance, then they can pray in whatever way they're able to pray. If a person is unable to pray standing, they can pray sitting. If they're unable to pray sitting, they can pray lying on their side. But a person should pray. Unless a person has no ability whatsoever. And even in that case, and you can pray. Even if you can't stand and bow and prostrate, you can still pray according to your ability. Even if you're not even able to make wudu. Yani there's no time in which the prayer can be abandoned. Even if you can't make wudu. Now, even if you can't make wudu, you can pray. And that's a different situation. But I'm saying the point is that the prayer should never be abandoned except the person who is unconscious, insane, or whatever like this. Now,
a quick question about what you
No, it's regular. It's a sunnah. Now,
Yani
the origin of it. Okay, we don't have time to go into this in detail now. But whoever wants to see the details about it, inshallah. Yani we have a lengthy research and we have a summary. If you want to read the lengthy research, we can send it to you. If you want to read the summary, which is only 4 pages, you can take a summary, as you like. But in any case, the point is, right, that the Prophet ﷺ initially didn't used to pray after asr. But one time he was occupied by a delegation, he was unable to pray the sunnah prayers after dhuhr. So when he prayed the asr prayer, he prayed 2 rak'ah from dhuhr sunnah. And then, from that time on until he died, he always prayed 2 rak'ah after asr. So that means, even though the origin of it was that he had missed the sunnah prayers from earlier, and he was making them up, That was the origin. But after that, it became the sunnah. And he used to do it always. Every single day, he would pray after Asr, 2 rakah. Not only that, after the Prophet died, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, Ali did it, and other companions did it. And it's confirmed that they used to do it regularly.
What is the point that there is no sunnah after Asr?
There's no prayer after Fajr until the sun rises. There's no prayer until Asr, until after sunset. The hadith is reported in Bukhari. But that is mutlaq, and this is muqayyid. Yani that's a general hadith, and these hadith that I'm talking about here qualify and define that prohibition. What's prohibited, as narrated in the hadith of Bilal, and it's also narrated by Anas and other companions, that the Prophet ﷺ prohibited a person to pray after Asr when the sun is about to set. When it is not bright and high in the sky. When it is down and it became dark, orange colored, about before setting. There's hadith where the Prophet ﷺ said this is the time that's prohibited. So this is qualifying the general statement about no prayer after Asr, specifying it to this time, otherwise before the time it's permissible. Anyway, you have to read, Yani, you have to read the subject in detail because it's a lengthy topic. Okay, it's a lengthy topic. But I know some people will say, but there's a hadith so you can't pray after Asr. Naam. And there are hadith which qualify what time you can't pray after Asr. That is when it's close to Maghrib. Naam.
Concerning somebody that has traveled, so if you travel, let's say for a month, then you want to pray the salat. Is it a must for you to shorten them and combine them, or if you have a choice to pray with the jama'ah and pray full?
If you are praying, you're a traveler.
If you travel, let's say
for a long period of time.
Now, you want to pray the salat.
Yani, if you're a traveler, even if you're traveling for a long time, you are still entitled to combine and shorten the prayers as a traveler. But the general rule is, while you are traveling, you're on the road, then it's better that you combine the prayers for ease of the performance of the prayer and you're traveling. When you stop over in a place, it's better for you when you're stopping over in a place, even though you're a traveler, you're going to stop there for the whole day or 2 days or 3 days, it's better to pray the prayers in their time. It's better to pray the prayers in their time. If you pray with the imam who is resident, then you pray the prayer full with the imam. يعني إنما جعل الإمام ليؤتم به. The imam is made to be followed. If you follow the imam, follow him. You can't get out of the prayer before the imam. Allahu alam. Yani that is the more correct view concerning this. That's what I understand. So if you follow the imam, then even as a traveler, you should pray 4 rakah. Some people say that you can pray 2 rakah because you're a traveler, but you can't leave the prayer before the imam. So you just sit after you pray 2 rakah, wait till the imam gets up and prays the third, gets up and prays the fourth, and then when he makes taslim, you can make taslim. Allahu alam. But in any case, if you follow the imam, you have to follow him. You can't leave him. If you are the imam while you're a traveler, or you're following someone who's also a traveler, then you pray 2 rakah. Make the prayer shortened for dhuhr, for asr, and for isha. Allahu alam. Anyway, let's try to finish a little bit. We only have just a couple of moments remaining. These are detailed topics that require a more lengthy discussion. We just have a few minutes remaining for our time. Okay, so let's try to. And you get one more point out of this, and that is the third condition that's mentioned here, the sitrul awra, yani the covering of the private areas. Naam, it says here, وَحَدُّ أَوْرَةِ الرَّجُلِ مَا بَيْنَ سُرَّتِهِ وَرُقْبَتِهِ أَخْذًا بِالْأَحْوَطِ. Yani this is in parenthesis, أَخْذًا بِالْأَحْوَطِ. Okay, so what are we saying here? وَحَدُّ الْأَوْرَى. The limit or the boundaries that define the aura of the man is what is between his navel and his knee. Between the navel and the knee. That is the boundaries of the aura. It can't go, yani, beyond that. Yani, less, yani, below the navel or above the knees. It has to be at least covering from the navel to the knees. That's the minimum. أخذن بالأحوط. And أخذن بالأحوط means that we're taking the opinion that is safer. Because there's difference of opinion about this. يعني, because there's some hadith which suggests that the thigh is not part of the awra. Because Uthman ibn Affan is authentically narrated that he was in the presence of the Prophet and his garment was above his knee. And the Prophet ﷺ didn't scold him about it. So there's some dispute about this particular matter. But what is the safer view is that Yani, it should be including, the thigh is included as a part of the awra, in which there's some hadith that mention, Yani, al-fakhdhu awratun. In any case, yani I think he mentions the hadith here. It says, وَحَدُّ الْعَوْرَ for the man. Okay, so that means that the awrah for the woman is different than the man. حَدُّ عَوْرَةُ الرَّجُلِ مَا بَيْنَ سُرَّتِهِ وَرُكْبَتِهِ أَخْذًا بِالْأَحْوَطِ فَأَنْ جَرْحَدْ يعني جَرْحَدْ الْأَسْلَمِي رضي الله عنه. It is said that he was a companion of the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم, and his companionship, his suhbah, is disputed. But in any case, it appears from this narration that he was certainly in the time of the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم. فَأَنْ جَرْحَدْ, I'll say جَرْحَدْ يعني الْأَسْلَمِي رضي الله عنه قال مَرَّ رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم وَعَلَيَّ بُرْدَةٍ وَقَدْ انْكَشَفَتْ فَخْذِي فَقَالَ غَتِّي فَخْذَيْكَ فَإِنَّ الْفَخْذَ عَوْرَةٌ رَوَاهُ مَالِكٌ وَأَحْمَدُ وَأَبُو دَاوُدَ وَالتِّرْمِذِيُّ وَذَكَرَهُ الْبُخَارِيُّ فِي صَحِيحِهِ مُعَلَّقًا مُعَلَّقًا. Very important point here. Make a note of مُعَلَّقًا. طيب. So this hadith from Jawhar Jarhad رضي الله عنه, he said, مَرَّ رَسُولُ اللَّهِ صلى الله عليه وسلم. The Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم مَرَّ passed by. وَعَلَيَّ بُرْدَةٍ, I was wearing a burda. وَقَدْ انْكَشَفَتْ فَخْذِي, my thigh was shown, it was uncovered. فَقَالَ, so he صلى الله عليه وسلم said, غَطِّي فَخْذَيْكَ فَخْذَيْكَ, يعني غَطِّي, cover your thighs, both of them. فَإِنَّ الْفَخْذَ عَوْرَةٌ, for indeed the thigh is awra. Awra, it means what? That which must be covered. That which must be covered. That must not be seen from the man or from the woman. And of course, the awra of the man is different from the awra of the woman. This narration is reported by Imam Malik in his book. Which book? Imam Malik. Al-Muwatta. And Ahmed in his book. Al-Musnad. And Abu Dawood and Tirmidhi in their books. As-Sunan. وذكره البخاري في صحيحه معلقا. What is the meaning of this? And Bukhari mentions it in his Sahih, in his book, the Sahih of al-Bukhari, but he mentioned it معلقا, suspended. What do we mean suspended? يعني meaning what? Meaning that the isnad that Bukhari mentions, he mentions it with an isnad that's not complete. It's معلقا. He doesn't mention, يعني is a break in the beginning of the chain. Okay, so that means that Bukhari mentioned in his Sahih Mu'allaqan. This means to us technically in the study of hadith that this hadith is not included as a part of the Sahih of Bukhari.
No.
It's not from the Sahih of Bukhari. When we say here ذَكَرَهُ فِي صَحِيْهِ مُعَلَّقًا, that means this. Don't say this hadith is in Sahih Bukhari. It's in the book, but mentioned مُعَلَّقًا, that means it's not considered to be from what is called the Sahih of Bukhari. Because مُعَلَّقًا means the chain is not complete, therefore there could be some problem with it. Even though Bukhari, normally he didn't mention any hadith, even مُعَلَّقًا, except it's at least Hassan. But maybe it doesn't meet his condition of Sahih, so he mentioned it مُعَلَّقًا. But it still may be Hassan, as this hadith is. Okay? So, by the way, Sheikh al-Albani mentions this hadith in Irwa al-Ghalil, and he said the hadith is Sahih لغيره, يعني hadith number 269 in Irwa al-Ghalil. He says Sahih لغيره. What does that mean? And what does, يعني, what do we understand from that? What does that mean, Sahih لغيره? What does it mean, literally? That is authentic لغيره, يعني من أجل غيره, due to غيره, يعني it's Sahih due to غيره, due to other narrations which support it. Yani that means originally it's not Sahih, it's Hassan. Maybe it's Hassan. And then because they're supporting narrations that support it and strengthen it, it became Sahih, but due to غيره, other than it. Other narrations supporting it, strengthening it. Okay, Sheikh al-Albani said in Awal Ghalil, hadith is Sahih, يعني Sahih لغيره. أما المرأة, and we're going to stop with this, as far as the woman, فجميع جسدها عورة, يجب عليها ستره في الصلاة ما عدا الوجه والكفين إلا إذا خشيت أن ينظر إليها رجل غير ذي محرم فيجب عليها حينئذ ستر وجهها وكفيها وذلك لحديث عائشة رضي الله عنها وعليه السلام أن النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم قال لا يقبل الله صلاة حائض إلا بخمار رواه الخمسة إلا النسائي وصححه ابن خزيمة والحاكم. Okay, here as far as the woman, فجميع جسدها أورا. The whole of her body is aura. Obligatory, yajibu alayha, is obligatory upon her to cover the whole of her body in the salat. Okay, here we're talking about what? We're talking about in the salat. Ma ada, yani illa alwaj wal kafain, except the face and the two palms of the hands. Yani in the salat, the face and the palms of the hand are not required to be covered. Illa idha khashiyat. Except if she fears, أن ينظر إليها رجل غير محرم. Except that she fears that a man who is not a mahram from her immediate family, prohibited degrees of marriage, any of the people that she can't marry, close relatives, unless she fears that a man who is not a mahram for her may look at her. In that case, فيجب عليها حينئذٍ ستر وجهها وكفيها. In that case, it's obligatory upon her, even in the salat, to cover her face and the palms of her hands. In that case, even in salat, if she fears, she's praying in the haram in Mecca or in Medina, and there are lots of men walking by, and there's no wall between them, they're not in another room, then men will look. She has to cover her face and her hands. Let me just finish the reading of this, and then we'll come to the questions. Yani, so in the salat, the face and hands, the palms of the hands, are not required to be covered by the woman unless she fears that a man who is a stranger may look at her. In that case, she has to cover her face and her hands. وَذَلِكَ لِحَدِيثَ Aisha رَضِيَ اللَّهُ عَنْهَا. And this is based on the hadith of Aisha, may Allah be pleased with her, that the Prophet ﷺ said, لَا يَقْبَلُ اللَّهُ صَلَاتَ حَائِضٍ إِلَّا بِخِمَارٍ, that Allah does not accept the prayer of a ha'id, yani meaning a woman who reached the age of having menses, yani an adult woman. Allah doesn't accept the salat of an adult woman except that she is wearing a khimar, a head covering. Is reported by Al-Khamsa, except Al-Nasa'i. Who is Al-Khamsa?
Ahmad wa Al-Arba'.
Now Al-Ahmad wa Al-Arba'. Yani Abu Dawud al-Tirmidhi, Ibn Majah, and Ahmad, because it said except Nasa'i. Nasa'i is originally from the Khamsa, but except Nasa'i. And it is also declared to be Sahih by Ibn Khuzaymah in his book, the Sahih Ibn Khuzaymah, and Al-Hakim in his book, Al-Mustadrak. And Shaykh Al-Albani also said in the Sahih Ibn Majah that this hadith is Sahih. In the Sahih Ibn Majah, hadith number 534.
Shaykh, so Ibn Majah has also a Sahih.
Yes, Shaykh Al-Albani has a collection of hadith from the four Sunan, all four of them. Sahih Ibn Majah, Sahih Al-Tirmidhi, Sahih Abi Dawud, and Sahih...
At-Tirmidhi.
Sheikh Al-Bani separated the four books of Sunan. He separated the hadith which are Sahih from those which are, yani Sahih and Hassan, from those which are Da'if. According to his conditions. Which are not agreed upon by everyone. In any case, this is the last point that we want to make, that the woman, the whole of her body is aura. She must cover it in the salat, except her face and hands. But even that exception is not applicable if she fears that a man who is not a relative of her may be looking at her. In that case, she has to cover her face and hands. And the first evidence for this is the hadith that's mentioned here, that she has to cover. The evidence that's mentioned here is that she has to cover. Allah didn't accept the salat of an adult woman except that she's wearing a khimar. The clearer hadith about this issue is the hadith in which the Prophet ﷺ said, Al-mar'atu awratun. Yani this hadith, Shaykh Al-Albani mentions Sahih Al-Jami'ah, hadith number 669, Al-mar'atu awratun. Yani that the woman, the whole of her, is awra, must be covered, must not be revealed, yani to other than her immediate family, yani those who are mahram for her. So these two hadith together, Allah doesn't accept the salat of a woman except she's wearing a khimar. And this hadith, which is more general, that the woman is awra, the whole of the woman is awra, meaning to a strange man. So this proves the second point, that is, that if a woman is in prayer and strangers may be looking at her, the whole of the woman is awra, including her face and hands. Although it's not the awra that's required for salah, but it's awra that's required for strange men. And that's why we're saying, if a strange man, if she fears that a strange man may look at her, then even in the salat, she has to cover her face and her hands. And I guess we can stop here. Unless there's a question, then we may take a question. And then, I think Waleed had a question first. I asked him to let me finish reading. So if he still has a question, we'll take his question first.
No, you just mentioned it kind of with the aura, but so for Qimat, they say this is a difference of opinion.
No. So a difference of opinion, like which on the point of what?
What is
a Qimat?
Yes. Or at least for to make it brief.
Yeah.
The opinion that we're talking about here.
Yeah, we're talking about khimar means the head covering. The head covering should cover the woman's head, should cover her ears, should cover her neck, should cover her breasts, and it should cover her completely. It doesn't mean her face. The khimar doesn't mean her face, no. No. But in any case, the point of the woman's face being covered is a disputed issue. There are scholars from the people of Sunnah who say it's obligatory for a woman to cover her face, and there are other scholars who say it's not obligatory, and this is a disputed matter. So both of those opinions are legitimate opinions. Both of them are legitimate, but what is the stronger opinion is the opinion that the woman is required to cover her face. And one of the sheikhs, he wrote a book about this. It's about 500 or 600 pages. And he wrote three volumes. One volume is about 560 pages that deal with the hijab of the woman covering her face. And in that one volume of it, he mentions only the evidences of the obligation of the woman covering her face, and it's about 500 pages of ayahs from the Quran, all the books of tafsir, what the scholars of tafsir said about these ayahs, hadith, and all other discussions. So it's a lengthy issue. There's a big difference of opinion about it, but in my view, Allahu A'lam, I read both sides of the issue. I think that what is more correct and stronger is that it is obligatory for a woman to cover her face. However, if a woman doesn't cover her face, for whatever reason it might be, because she believes in the other opinion, then there's no blame on her. I mean, nobody should criticize a person who has a different view, especially if that other view is the view of scholars, of the people of Sunnah. Shaykh al-Albani, rahimahullah, has the view that it's not obligatory for a woman to cover her face. That is not obligatory.
Shaykh, did you read his opinion?
Concerning? I read his opinion concerning it. Naam. But anyway, also, if whoever wants to read about this issue, I have done some research concerning this that we've compiled. You can read it also in detail or in brief. We have the brief and we have the detail. From the book Awdat al-Hijab, there are a lot of evidences and a lot of tafsirs. Well, the scholars, the early scholars, talked about this subject and the ayahs to deal with this issue. And they clearly stated, what is more correct concerning this view. Wallahu a'lam. We're going to stop here. We're going to stop here, inshallah, because it's almost time. And it's time right now for the adhan. Subhanak Allahumma wa bihamdika. Ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta astaghfiruka wa atubu ilayk.